Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. If you are a person living anywhere in rural Northumberland County, there was good news for you last week. High-speed internet is coming. The little spinning beach ball is gone, and the downloads that seem to take an eternity, well, they're over. That's at least what politicians are promising. A $110 million project was announced by officials from all three levels of government. It will bring super-fast connectivity to the doors of 13,500 people in the county who are currently not being served or are underserved. Once all this gets built, then others will be able to connect too. The project is a unique public-private partnership that could be a model for other rural municipalities across Canada. Dan Borowick, the Director of Economic Development for Northumberland County, will give all the details. I'm so pleased to have with me today Dan Borowick, the Director of Economic Development for Northumberland County. Welcome back to Consider This.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
If I'm an internet user, why was the announcement last week significant to me?
For a couple of reasons. One is that our aim for the last number of years has been to try and ensure that everyone have equal access to connectivity. And our look at connectivity has always been for those in particular who are either underserved or unserved within Northumberland. So this announcement is significant for us because it's we believe we have an innovative way of ensuring that activity will take place and that we will have a fully connected county.
Tell me about this innovative way.
Well, one of the challenges that we've been faced with throughout the whole process of trying to do connectivity is that there always needs to be from the ISPs, the internet service providers, a business case to actually provide the service, and this is certainly said without criticism of any of those sort of name brand organizations or ISPs, but the reality is their models are very, very much based on serving an urban clientele or wherever there is a high concentration of individuals in order to make the necessary return they are looking for. And so in a rural setting, our challenge has always been how to make this work in such a way that we can provide the necessary connectivity that is actually necessary to service everything from educational to healthcare to business needs for a rural constituency. So what our thought was that if we start to treat broadband more like a utility, and if we look at hydro is probably one of the best examples. We do have power to each and every household in Northumberland County. There is an existing infrastructure, and that if we start to think about that in terms of a utility, how can we make use of that existing infrastructure to actually get connectivity to the home. We also realized that in trying to create that kind of model, it would require both federal and provincial cooperation, as well as finding a private sector partner who is willing to invest in creating that type of utility. And one of the models that we've sort of tried to use as an illustrator of this, it's a lot like track and train. What we decided to do was try and create the necessary track and put it in place so that ISPs could then utilize the track, become those train cars that connect people. So that's how we approached it. It's been a long journey. We've been at this since the fall of 2019, I guess, in terms of trying to shape this and then go through the necessary steps that would be necessary to make it a reality. It's been a collaboration amongst a number of departments within the county. Certainly our director of IT, Tony Pollock, who has recently left for another role, was instrumental in terms of actually moving forward with a digital strategy. From an economic development perspective, we looked at that digital strategy and thought, how can we operationalize it? So between IT, between economic development, we certainly worked to bring this to reality. And if you like, I can sort of give you sort of that sort of what happened over time effect too. That's how we got there.
I'd like to come back to that in a second. I want to go back though to an earlier thing that you did, and you alluded to this system as being a public utility.
Yep.
And I guess the question is, usually when I think of a public utility, something like the fire department or the police department, or as you mentioned, hydro, these tend to be public services that are paid for by taxpayer dollars. And yet you've described this as a public-private partnership with Northumberland County. So private sector is often associated with making profits, and also the possibility of creating a monopoly. So why isn't this being done as a utility and being paid for by taxpayers? And why did you choose the option you did?
I guess the reason we chose the option we did was, and I guess it's a utility. Maybe I should preface this by stating it. We use the term utility because sometimes that's maybe the easiest way to try and frame the absolute need for connectivity. Hydro, water, gas, connectivity, sort of all sort of, you know, fall into that same sort of category. Some view connectivity as the fourth utility. One of the things we did was try and shape it under that sort of conceptual idea. What we did not want to create was a monolith of a utility that then becomes a public sector entity that can't service the needs we require without it being enormously costly. So the way we thought this through was that if we can get the necessary buy-in for the, you know, broadband as a fourth utility concept, we can then maybe modify what the business model looks like to put it into a framework where it's not always the burden of the local taxpayer who has to maintain this, but rather we can provide the infrastructure necessary, and the individual can decide whether they want to make use of these infrastructure or not. The other thing that I think made us successful in terms of trying to make this concept go forward was the fact that we were looking at two different sources of funding. We were looking at the public sector funding that would come, that was now available through both the federal and provincial governments, the Universal Broadband Fund through the federal government, the ICON funding available through the provincial government. And then our next challenge was to find a private sector partner who truly was looking at utilizing the funds that they were able to access for more the environmental, social, and governance type of model where they weren't seeking immediate short-term return on their investment, but rather making long-term investments in community. And in point of fact, one of the steps in our process was to issue an RFP to try and find that type of private sector partner who met those conditions for us. The other factor in this structure is that we needed a structure that would allow ISPs to be able to utilize the model and therefore make it open access. In the initial stages of this structure, we are going to be dealing with only one ISP because we need to try and overcome some of the sort of business marketing utilization of getting customers to utilize this system. But over a set period of time, it will then move to a fully open access system. So if you're a small ISP who does not have the money to invest in the capital infrastructure that's available, you simply lease the space. So back to that sort of track and train type of arrangement, the track's in place. You can put a car on that track, and it can vary as to what services you may wish to offer. We just thought that would create a more competitive marketplace for ISPs to compete in a rural framework. So it's complex, but it's all coming together.
Explain to the listener then how this deal works. So what part does the county do, and what part does the private sector do?
All right. From the county perspective, what the county has done is they are the lead applicant and the recipient of federal and provincial funds totaling $45 million.
So you guys get the cash, $45 million, and then you disperse that out.
Well, we do. That's the Northumberland end of that process. We were successful in obtaining the $45 million because we had to bring to the table a private sector partner that would then invest an additional $65 million in order to actually service the number of households in Northumberland that need to be serviced to meet the objective of this particular funding project. There are approximately 39,000 households in Northumberland. 13,500 of those households are either unserved or underserved in terms of connectivity.
So wait a minute. We're spending $110 million to service how many people?
13,500 households. Now, that's a lot of households.
Yeah. It is. And that's a lot of money.
Well, it is a lot of money, yes. And so, in doing so, you can understand that this is for $110 million. It's a complex and detailed structure to move forward with.
But in the end, if I'm listening to this and I live out in a rural area and I'm maybe underserved or I'm not being served, what can I expect? Is it going to be an antenna? Is it going to be a dish? Is it what am I going to see when it's all put in place?
Fiber to the home, actual fiber to the home, minimum 1 meg.
Now, for people who don't know what that means. How fast would that be in if I was a gamer or if I was like my Netflix, what would that mean to me?
It means you could do all of that without having the little circle come up on your screen going round and round and round and round. So it is significant capacity.
So we're talking about 1 gig a second. So if I was a gamer, I think 50 megabytes per second is like one or two gamers. I think if you have 1 gig, you could have like 5+ people, heavy multiple player games could be going at the same time. That's how fast it is.
And I guess what it means for the homeowner or the household is it means you can enjoy your entertainment you can game, you can access government services, you can conduct your business from home without interruption, and as I said, not to diminish any of the other alternatives, which are satellite or antenna. The fiber to the home pretty much interruption free. I mean,
now I know with service providers sometimes there's a tiered system. You know, you get so many, so much speed at the low end of the scale, and then you have to pay more and more and more if you want the higher speeds. So can you tell us, is it going to be a tiered system like this, or will everyone get access to the high speed at an affordable price?
The ultimate aim of this is everyone obtaining access at an affordable price.
So do we have any ideas of numbers at this point? I know it's early in the game, but can we suggest anything?
I guess what I could suggest is it's price competitive. And one of the reasons I can't give you more detail is because there are still negotiations going on. And we're not at liberty to speak to that yet. But one of the conditions, like many of the conditions that we've placed in terms of actually trying to move the entire project forward, is that it needs to be price competitive.
Okay, so nobody's going to be left behind, kind of a thing.
No, that's the intent. And it's how we structured it.
Well, let's take it back now, because you alluded to this earlier, and maybe it would be helpful to the listeners to understand just what the historic arc of all of this has been, because I know broadband has been on the table for the county for a very, very long time, and there's been different initiatives and different things tried out. Can you just walk us through, not in a lot of detail, but just give us a sense of the arc of, you know, where we started and how we got to where we are today?
I guess we started with attending what was billed as Canada's first rural broadband conference, actually held in North Bay in the fall of 2019. During that time, we had the opportunity to meet with both federal and provincial representatives and some other entities that were starting to get heavily involved in the marketplace. From the federal representatives, they were pretty clear to us that if you want to initiate something significant, you'll need to know the first thing you'll need to know is what do you actually have to then tell us what you actually need, which seems fairly straightforward. But from that, what we did was we put out an RFP to find a company who could actually do an asset assessment of what actually existed in Northumberland in terms of connectivity, and so that took a little while to do because they went through each municipality individually, drove the county, tried to determine who had what where, and I should tell you one of the things that normally exist within the connectivity marketplace is oftentimes some of the major suppliers of broadband are not really forthcoming as to where they may have laid cable or where they might have put the term used is dark fiber. Dark fiber is it's there, but nobody knows. Well, they know, and it's I mean, it's a good strategy because I mean, it makes a lot of sense to put fiber in as construction is taking place, or you see future opportunities that someday you may require it. Certainly, what would have made the process simpler is if some of that information was more forthcoming. So it took us a while to acquire that. Once we acquired that, we then looked at having what. We then knew what we needed in terms of how many households were either unserviced or underserved or unserviced. And our initial projection was around 14,000 households that fell into that category. Our actual funding in terms of once that negotiation was complete and reviewed by the various ministries and their engineering groups was 13,500. So we were off by about 500, but it's a bit of a moving target too. I mean, we started all this in 2020 and we managed to achieve this during COVID, plus trying to secure that number while other organizations and other ISPs are laying fiber or making build outs or receiving provincial or federal money makes it a bit like it's set in jello a bit. You know, the slightest variation in temperature is going to change the shape of this in the end, because there is some real consistency in what is unserved or underserved. We managed to determine what that was. Once we knew what we needed, we then could go forward with a business case that suggested, you know, this is what it would cost in order to service these households, and looked at the various types of technology that could be available to do that. We made a decision that in the end, even though maybe slightly more costly, the fiber to the home would be the most reliable long-term investment that we could ask for in order to provide the service. So, by mid 2020, and then late 2020, we were in a place where we had could have the information we required to move on applications to both the federal and provincial governments, and we'd also put out an RFP a bit earlier for a private sector partner who would be interested in partnering with us to move forward with that. Applications were completed by late 2020, early 2021. July of 2021, we had received notice that we had been conditionally approved for our applications. And then since that period of time, we've been working on finalizing the details for both the public sector funding and also negotiations throughout with our private sector partner. So we knew conditionally that we had been approved on in the end of July in 2021, but we were under a communications embargo to not talk about it in any type of public forum until the conditional approval had been worked through for final numbers. So, you know, it's been a long process.
Quite the journey. I'm curious though, now that this is all going to happen, do we know any of the names of the players at all? Are you able to tell us who is the private sector partner?
Sure. There was a last on Friday, the 29th, there was an event at Codrington, information related to the project was released at that time. Our private sector partner is an organization called DIG, which is short for the Digital Infrastructure Group, and they are a collection of specific expertise that brings together both equipment suppliers, construction, ISP, all under one umbrella.
So would we recognize like Rogers, Telus, Bell, or any of those players in the background?
Not, no.
So this group is unique unto itself.
They are unique unto itself, primarily because I think with respect to the major players in the industry, their strategy is tends to be fairly specific. They go into areas where there is business opportunity and far more immediate return in terms of infrastructure investment. We had to work it in a different type of model, because this is really a long-term investment for an investment group that sees return over time as opposed to immediate.
So this DIG group, are we their only project, or do they have other projects elsewhere that they're doing?
They're involved in other projects in Western Canada.
Is this unique, this project? Is it unique? I mean, are we a model for the rest of Ontario?
We might very well be. I'm sure. We're being, as it unfolds, I'm sure it will be closely watched.
All right. If I was a internet service provider right now, we've mentioned a couple of the big names. I don't know how they would respond, but there are smaller internet service providers locally, people who have already gone in and tried to provide services to rural users. What's going to happen to them?
I would suggest once we're the current deadline for having the work completed is this end of December 2024 for all of this. We would probably at that time, depending upon how the final negotiations go, we would probably be close to being an open access network at that time, which means then any smaller provider could look to lease space on the network that's been built.
And at that point, then people will be able to sign up for accounts and.
Yeah, we anticipate that we'll start actual physical construction prior to the end of this year, and in doing so, the rollout for this project goes east to west. So it will begin in the east end of the county and move west towards Port Hope. As that begins, the DIG group and its associated services will begin selling the opportunity for users to get on as quickly as possible as it's being built.
As it goes along, people will be able to sign up. It won't be like we'll all have to wait till December.
That's right. No, it's build and sign, basically. So,
okay. So if I'm listening to this, what's my takeaway?
That if you are currently unserved or underserved, it's coming, and I think we've figured it out.
So where do we go from here then? What's next steps?
We're in the midst of finalizing negotiations with our private sector entity. Because we're running, to try and finalize those negotiations, activities have been running in parallel. I mean, Fed, Prov, private sector, it's a bit of a Rubik's Cube. One moves, it has impact on everything else. And so we're just in the final stages of that, but we're real close. One of the other, other activities that are going on are municipal access agreements need to be signed. There's a sort of a list of sort of the necessary paper that needs to be put in place to move this all along, and we're trying to move that along as quickly as possible. Once that's completed, as I said, we're looking at construction to begin later this year.
I mean, considering that there's a provincial election and a municipal election coming up, this is a lot of good news for them, eh?
It is. It is. It's. It, it, and you know, none of this, everyone had a role in this and everyone was supportive. And that's important to recognize that, you know, council has been, county council has been hugely supportive of this initiative. Provincially and federally, we have been supported. The federal contribution is $25 million. The provincial contribution is $20 million. It's rolled up together to make the $45 million. There's been an awful lot of trust in that this could actually happen, and it's certainly been, it's greatly appreciated from our end. I was involved when the first Eastern Ontario Development Program funding was put together almost 20 years ago. That program sort of came off my desk, and I remember we received the first money, which was $10 million, which at the time in 2004 was, you know, an unheard of amount. And amongst all this celebration in the Great Railway Room in Ottawa on the Hill, somebody turned to me and said, so I guess the real work begins now. And it's true, because, you know, the money in some ways is significant, but the real work now begins in ensuring that the money is used in such a way that it meets the obligations of what the money was meant to do. So that's our next step.
Dan Borwick, thank you so much for talking to me today.
No problem. It's been a pleasure.
That was Dan Borwick, Director of Economic Development for Northumberland County, talking about high-speed internet for rural residents. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.